Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk show host, Randy Fine. Today's special guest, neuroscientist and inventor Amy Sarin, is on a mission to help people master their minds and eliminate stress and PTSD. In her book, The Stress Switch, The Truth About Stress and How to Short-Circuit It, she shares cutting-edge brain science. Dr. Sarin believes that our brains aren't broke and asks, what if excess stress was not a chronic, permanent condition to be coped with, but instead a specific type of neurological programming that could be cured? Yes, that's right, cured. What if what you've been taught about how to handle stress was wrong, and neuroscience could offer you real solutions? Dr. Sarin's approach to switching off the stress switch is both scientific and holistic. She holds a PhD in clinical psychology with a specialty in pediatric neuropsychology from the Fielding Institute in Santa Barbara, California. Dr. Sarin is the founder of Sarin Center Neuropsychology Clinics and the co-creator of TouchPoints Wearable Devices. And wait till you hear about that, because that is really amazing. But anyway, I want to hear from our expert, so we're going to get started. I'll introduce you. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It is my absolute pleasure. So, The Truth About Stress and How to Short-Circuit It. Your book is called The Stress Switch. What do you mean? Where did that title come from, and what does it represent in the book?
Well, we have been taught a lot of very complicated things about stress and what it is and how to try to control it that are wrong. And our new neuroscience really shows us that there's a major network that controls this. And if you think about your stress in terms of the switch, where zero is your calm and 10 is that you're in full-blown like panic or fight or flight, what you have to know is that this network is actually kind of dimming the switch or turning it on and off and kind of like fluctuating all day long, but it's happening without your awareness. So you can actually be pretty stressed out and not even be aware of it. And it's doing this for you. And I think a lot of people, we're obsessed with consciousness and we think that it's worth thinking about stress and then we become stressed. But the reality is we become stressed and then we have to think about it. And so if we get it right in terms of how this is really working with the body and simplify it to a switch concept, then I think it's easier for everyone to understand the neuroscience and also how to fix it and hack into it and how to pay attention to it in your daily lives. And, you know, I know you're an expert in dealing with narcissistic abuse. And a lot of times the inability to tune into our stress switches, because it is an autonomic function, meaning it's happening automatically, is why we don't understand these people's effects on us and choose to like get into relationships with them and stay with them and things like that. And so if we can tune into it, we're going to probably make better decisions.
Okay, great. Yeah, because and this topic particularly interests me because of that, because everyone, whether they've been raised by a narcissistic parent, and especially those people, because they have they're on high alert all the time as a result of their childhood. So we have complex PTSD going on in all these people because it's long term. And then we have these relationships that you're talking about. So it would be great to be able to help people really cure that low-lying stress as well as the high stress that comes up with triggers and things like that. You explain really well the nervous system 101, you call it. And can you just give us kind of a brief explanation of how our nervous system works and how it affects stress?
Yes. So we used to think that if you see a snake, you recognize consciously that it's a snake, and then you get stressed out. But we know now that there's a network called the salience network, and the salience network's job is to just integrate all the sensory information, so the sights, the sounds, the smells, and also any internal thoughts and pain sensations. And it's integrating it without your awareness and deciding what to do with your attention and also what to do with your stress switch. So a lot of times, you know, people sometimes will go, oh, gosh, I have an ant bite. I don't even know when I got that. That's because in that moment you got that ant bite, the salience network did not deem it important enough to have you shift your attention to that from what you were doing. So it's actually being chosen for you what you get to pay attention to, and it's dimming up or down the stress switch based on input. And that's why you can hear a loud sound and it will immediately put you up to a stress switch of about, you know, 8 or 9, or put you into fight or flight, or other sensory stuff like calming things, calming music, can actually over time your salience network processing that will dim it down for you. But if people have gone through narcissistic abuse as a childhood from a parent, let's say, what happens is that their default stress switch is conditioned to be very high. And this is where we get the chronic PTSD, is because most of us, let's say I wake up this morning and I know I've got this radio show and then I'm going to go speak at a conference and then I have, you know, a date tonight and all these things. And I wake up and I'm feeling pretty good. You know, my stress switch default is about a 2, maybe, you know, 0 to 2. It's really in kind of this healthy, mild range. But if I am a survivor of narcissistic abuse as a kid and I wake up, I might have woken up to a parent screaming at me several times, or never knowing what I'm going to walk into when I get into the kitchen, or even if it's a covert narcissist, you know, I walk in and someone just says something passive aggressive, and that conditions your nervous system to be on high alert. So this salience network is keeping your stress switch in a high mode. You might wake up now, you know, being, I'm 44, waking up in your 40s, going, gosh, I'm waking up, my life is good, but why am I so stressed out, you know? And the answer is that default mechanism over time was conditioned, and we have to decondition it. It can be done, but it takes some work.
Okay. So what are some of the methods in which we can de-stress ourselves or get rid of this mechanism that's happening unconsciously?
Yeah. One important, really important thing to do is define what stress is. Stress is actually your body's in the moment, in the now moment, reaction to a trigger. And it can be an internal trigger. Like, you know, you don't even have to remember anything, but an internal trigger could be, you know, every morning I woke up with somebody yelling at me, or it happens so often. The internal trigger is your nervous system memory, even without you consciously being aware of that, is setting it up high. But that's the in the moment, where's my stress switch in the moment, right? That's what stress is. It's actually what's happening right now. It's not the fact that I have, you know, an abusive mother-in-law or something, and that's not stress. That's a stress or. That's something that might trigger me if I think about her or if she's in my face, right? So we can only work with what's happening in the moment. Even when we're dealing with memories, we can really only process them if they feel kind of stressful in the now moment. So if I say, hey, Randy, think about something stressful, you pull it up in your mind. I say 0 to 10, where does that register on your stress switch? Oh, it's a 7. You can pull that stress up in the moment, and then we can work with that in the moment. So that's a really important concept. And the way that we can decondition someone's default stress switch is through a lot of means. We need to work with them in the moment, and that's what the touch points devices are for. These are vibrations, which, so they're non-invasive, but it's a sensory input that the salience network, for some reason, when it gets this kind of input, dims down your stress switch, and it does it about 62% in 30 seconds, and that's published scientific research. So this was the fastest thing and the most effective thing that I could find in my 10 years of work on this to lower the stress switch significantly. So you can use something like that in the moment. We've been taught to use breathing techniques or meditation or all these things. The problem with those is that when your stress switch is higher than, you know, let's say a 5 or a 6, you can't take deep breaths. You don't have access to your thinking brain because it's shut down when you are in a state of stress that's too high. So the problem with what we've all been taught about stress is that the very strategies that we've all been told a million times to use break down in the actual moment of stress if the stress switch is higher than a moderate level. Now, if you're a little bit stressed out, that's fine. You can breathe. You can, you know, tell yourself positive things. You can do all those things that we've all been taught a million times, and those will work. But for those of us who have a high default stress switch mode, those methods are not available to us in the moments that we need them, nor are they going to work. So we need to hack into that stress system in a different way. And for someone with chronic PTSD or who had this kind of this childhood imprinting, what we really usually need to do is some intensive therapy like EMDR therapy, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. That's the number one therapy for post-traumatic stress disorder, according to the World Health Organization, along with trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. But the trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy takes longer. So I use EMDR because it's more efficient. And then sometimes we do things like neurofeedback in my clinics to help the brain kind of regulate itself, and the combination of that and therapy is needed to really get rid of PTSD. But PTSD, make no mistake, is absolutely curable. And in my book, I talk about, you know, we're not thinking of it correctly. You know, you wouldn't get a water leak in your basement and think, oh, okay, well, I guess this is leaking now. Let me go get, you know, let me go put my life jacket on and get an inflatable, and I guess we're just going to hang out in the basement while it floods, you know, and oh, wow, this is really flooding. I guess we're going to have to, you know, I'm going to have to just do whatever, you know. That's how we look at PTSD. Oh, we've got this thing, and now it's just going to be chronic. And no, you fix the water pipe. So for people who don't already have PTSD, if they are in, and let's say, an adult relationship with a narcissist, and I actually, you don't know this, Randy, but I spent 16 years of my life in relationships with narcissists. One an overt narcissist for about 4 years, and one a covert narcissist, right? I thought I had that licked, and I spent about 11 years with a covert narcissist. And I'm a neuropsychologist, and I couldn't spot it. So if anyone's beating themselves up right now for their choices, I have a PhD in this, and it is just really, really hard to spot. But anyway, back to the water pipe. You know, if you have something and you get PTSD from it, or you're in a relationship with a narcissist, getting help right away is the most important thing. So your basement, if the water pipe breaks and you can fix it right away, now you don't have to, you know, you haven't ruined the washer and dryer, and you haven't ruined the carpet, and mold's not growing, and you're not, you know, you're not paying $50,000 for a renovation, right? Like, there's all these things that happen as a result of unprocessed PTSD, and it makes it so much worse. And that's when it becomes really chronic, and that's when it becomes that we have to do a lot more. The longer you let it go, like the more your basement is flooded, the more damage there is, and the more we're going to have to do to get it back to healthy and, you know, stable. So we need to really intervene right away. It's very important. And we are not talking about that as psychologists necessarily or as a medical community, because we think of it as a chronic problem. You know, once you get this label, then like it's over, right? Oh, I just have PTSD. I have PTSD. And I'm like, that is something that does not have to be a lifelong condition, nor does it have to be chronic. Same thing with phobias. Same thing with certain kinds of anxiety and depression. These things can be cured. And I think that we are underestimating the power of our new neuroscience because we misunderstand things. And so that's why it's my mission to bring this to people.
Wow, that's so great. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you're kind of like on the same kind of mission I am, because what I do is not really done at all. And the kind of coaching and counseling that I do to help people through this is something very different. And I find cognitive behavioral therapy does not work for this at all. So, you know, I love to hear different ways to do things, and it's great to know that this is something that can be cured. And I am familiar with EMDR. I've actually referred a couple people to or suggested that they do it. Explain a little bit about what that is.
So EMDR is an 8-phase comprehensive therapeutic process, and cognitive behavioral therapy is kind of embedded in it. So it's like kind of like CBT plus, where you go in and we're targeting certain things. So what we really need to do is get the neural pathways around certain memories to shift so that the nervous system doesn't keep reacting. So, for example, EMDR is one of the best therapies for phantom limb pain. And phantom limb pain is really interesting. If I get my arm amputated, let's say, I might years later feel it itching. I might feel pain in that arm. Okay, how is that possible if the limb is not physically attached to my body? Well, it's possible because pain is in your brain. That's why anesthesia works, okay? But there are memory traces of pain and of body sensations that can get activated when certain conditions happen, okay? This is no different than smelling Old Spice, and if I had somebody abuse me when I was little who was wearing Old Spice, and I smell it, now I immediately go into fight or flight. My salience network kicks up the stress switch. It has to do with our memory networks. So cognitive behavioral therapy teaches you to, you know, kind of contain, like, oh, you're getting nervous. Pay attention to being nervous. Now try to take deep breaths, which, again, doesn't work if you're too stressed and all these things. And painstakingly through our conscious networks tries to control your autonomic nervous system. It's a terrible match. You know, this is like me. I'm not going to play basketball with Shaquille O'Neal because he's going to beat me every time. It's we're very mismatched. But that's the same thing as using consciousness to try to control these autonomic networks. So we have to go in and kind of process these memories in a certain way with something called bilateral stimulation. And that can be the technology and the touch points is bilateral stimulation. Therapists also have patients move their eyes back and forth, which sounds hocus pocus, but when you do that, when you invoke what we call saccadic eye movements, which is just moving your eyes back and forth, that actually creates a dipole in the brain. It helps resolve this trauma as you're thinking about it. So the therapist takes you through this journey of identifying things that, when I think about things that happened then, in the moment, my stress switch goes up. And now we lower the stress switch until it's neutral. And now when I think about those things, it doesn't bother me. And more importantly, my unconscious networks are not going to trigger things that I don't want based on this memory either. So when I smell Old Spice now, I'm not going to go into fight or flight. When I see, you know, when I see an email, if I'm co-parenting with a narcissistic parent, right, and I've gotten divorced and I've gotten help, but I see an email and I go, you know, my gut starts to get sick, right? That doesn't happen anymore. So these automatic things are what we're really after. We're not after you trying to painstakingly try with all your might and your white knuckling of everything to control your own behavior, because you cannot control your autonomic nervous system with will. It doesn't work. Okay. So we go through it another way, in a more effective way. And that's essentially what the EMDR therapy does. We can neutralize anything. So I had a patient I'm thinking of with a sister who was narcissistic and very abusive and older. So she kind of functioned like a parent. And we processed all of the abuse, and she was sitting in her dentist's office, and that day her sister just happened to walk in and sit across from her before she realized that, you know, she was sitting right across from her. And her sister got kind of rattled because my patient had since, you know, cut off communication and set boundaries, which sister violated and all these things, so they didn't have a relationship. And my patient came back and said, I felt neutral. This, you know, this person who was the primary abuser in my life walks into this office, sits down, and I felt neutral. I was fine. And you know what? She was actually rattled. And she's like, this works. So that's an example of, you know, of where you can get to when you have a therapist who is highly skilled in EMDR.
Right. How do we find the most skilled EMDRs? Because EMDR practitioners, because not everyone is the best. So what do we look for?
I think you look for, there's a website called emdria.org. It's EMDRIA.org. And you can click on find a therapist and you can search for someone in your area. I think that, you know, sometimes it is just trial and error. Sometimes they'll list what level they are trained. So you want somebody that's at least, it's called level 2 trained. They've been through 2 weekends of that and they've gotten, you know, their supervision. Some people are EMDR trainers and they actually train other therapists. So those therapists tend to be more highly trained. And you can call, when you call, you can do your due diligence. You know, how long have you been using EMDR? How long have you been a therapist? How many patients do you typically see? You know, so I've been doing it for about 10 years now, 11 years. And, you know, I'm a much more effective and much quicker at resolving things than I was when I was only 1 or 2 years out.
Thank you. That's good. So, that's really good advice. Yeah. I mean, I always think it's important to vet whatever professional you're, you know, therapist or whatever you're getting ready to work with, because not everybody is right for you. So that's important.
Yeah. And pay attention to how you feel when you're with that person, because when we get involved with, you know, people who are narcissistic, if we are choosing the narcissist, right? So some of us, I had a great childhood, but then I grew up and I chose narcissists. So if you were choosing, what that means is that, you know, I was trained to ignore how I felt when I was with people, right? Be nice at all costs. Everyone's great. Project your own goodness onto people, you know, that kind of thing. So I wasn't trained to be discerning, right? And I think that was my Achilles heel. And so be discerning with your therapist. If you are with somebody and you just don't feel right about it, you don't have to figure out why. I don't care. Find someone else that you click with. It's fine. Don't feel bad, you know, if you don't want to go back to them or if they're going to wonder why you didn't come back or anything like that. You know, that's the patterning that gets people into trouble when they're choosing intimate relationships. And it also gets them into trouble when they're choosing a plumber or, you know, or a business partner, right? Or whatever, you know, we just pay attention to how you feel, because you deserve to be with somebody that you like and that you trust and who's really going to do a good job for you.
Right, exactly. Just because someone has a degree, letters behind their name, does not make them right for you. And trusting your gut, it goes with everything, and it really saves you from a lot of things like getting involved with a narcissist, because we know when we meet these people something isn't right, and then we second guess it, and we go from our gut feeling to our head, and we begin to reason it out. And as soon as we begin to reason it out, that's where they get us.
Yep.
What is the ACE? Let me see. You talk about the ACE evaluation. Is that what it's called?
The ACEs is the adverse childhood experiences. test, and it's in my book. And it's Kaiser Permanente in California did a study of, I think it was 17,000 people a while back, and they were trying to look for what questions can we ask somebody to predict health outcomes, okay, in their lives. And it wasn't how sick they were as a child. It was how much they had endured abuse as a child. So they whittled this down to 10 questions, which were things like, you know, were your parents divorced? Then you get a point for that. You know, did someone in your household, one of your parents, you know, go to jail? Did you witness abuse? Were you abused? You know, those kinds of questions are in it. And your ACEs score determines how healthy you will be statistically as an adult, and early death, prone to addiction, you know, artery disease, all these things. And the reason why, and people say, well, that's weird, you know, why does abuse have to do with heart disease? And the answer is that stress is inflammatory. Anytime your stress switch is moderately, you know, is dimmed up in the moderate or the high level, there's hormones, there's chemicals, all these things in your body are actually inflammatory to your body. And in being in a constant state of inflammation makes all of your systems develop in a way that are more unhealthy. And this is why we get, you know, we get a lot of people too, you know, oh, I have ADHD. And I'm like, well, if you were abused, you might not have ADHD, but when you're in a high stress switch mode, you can't pay attention, you're distracted. You are, you know, your eyes are darting around. You're not thinking clearly. It looks like ADHD, but it's just trauma. If we resolve that, a lot of times the ADHD symptoms go away. But the ACEs is a really important test because if you have a high ACEs score, you may suffer with what one of my chapters is it's called the storm within the calm. And, you know, I have a lot of patients that are in their 30s and 40s, women who had a high ACEs score. They had a rough childhood, and they come in and they're like, there's something wrong with me. You know, my husband's great. My kids are great. I have a good job, and I just can't, like, I'm irritable. I'm upset a lot. I can't sleep. There's a problem. Like, what's going on? And they're beating themselves up for it. And I'm like, well, you are the storm within the calm. Just because the storm is passed, it doesn't mean that your nervous system isn't still reacting to it, because our nervous systems are designed to, once something happens, they lock into it, and it tries to prevent us from re-experiencing that for survival, okay? And so what happens is if you're abused, your nervous system stress switch default is still on high until you reset it, and that's the storm within the calm, and you don't have conscious control over that, and this is, again, the problem. Well, I think I should just be happy. Well, great, but that doesn't work. I would love for you to be happy too, but again, you're going to play basketball with Shaq, you're going to lose. That's what your consciousness is this little person that's trying to fight this big, huge thing. And so we have to go about it another way. And one of the reasons why I developed the touch points is that when kids are going through an abusive state, like you take a foster child who's in and out of foster care, and their family of origin is so tumultuous that they lost custody and, you know, and all these problems, and they're just constantly in a state of hypervigilance, and they have all these problems. We put them in a new home, and then we think, okay, well, now they're in a stable home, and we forget about the storm within the calm. And then we assume the child should just be fine. They're not fine. If they have a high ACEs score, they're at risk of all these things, and they look like they have ADHD, and they're at risk of, you know, going into juvenile detention and all these things because their stress switch is on too high. And so if they have the touch points and they can use them on a daily basis, that can theoretically calm their nervous system down and lower their stress switch as they're developing. And I believe that we can take kids with ACEs scores of, you know, 8 or 9 out of 10, and when they're an adult, they will actually look like they only have an ACEs score of like 2 or 3 because we're intervening with their nervous system on a daily basis with this technology.
So you are the inventor of touch points, and they're wearable devices. So explain them to us, please. Explain what they are.
So they're just two squares, and they sync. You turn one on, and you turn the other one on, and they synchronize together, and they alternate vibrations. And we have to have them alternating, and we have to have one on each side of the body in order for the salience network to turn down the stress switch. So You can hold them in your hands. You can wear them on your wrist. We actually have they're modular, so you can put them on included bands, or we have sweatbands. So a lot of kids wear them in school all day. And so especially for kids who have autism, they actually go into fight or flight. Their stress switches go on high if someone turns a light on or if they hear a just a normal sound. So their salience networks are very dysregulated. So what we do is put them on them, and it reduces their disruptive and self-harming behaviors by about 72% in one study. And that's a study out of the UK. And they did a control group, and they, you know, like one child is banging their head like over 280 times in a week. And then the next week with the touch points on only did it 18 times, for example. So, and that was the only intervention. So, and it makes sense because, again, when our stress switches on, we go into fight or flight or freeze. So autistic kids don't have a lot of, you know, self-control, right? And their nervous systems are they're very reactive. So they will hide under desks. They'll bang their head. They'll, you know, have outbursts. They'll run out of the classroom. They'll do all of these what we call disruptive behaviors. And all those are, it's not the autistic child trying to get attention or trying to, you know, be disruptive. It's that this is an automatic behavior based on fight or flight. And for those of you who have ever been embarrassed while doing something in fight or flight, you have to know you don't get to pick whether or not you go into fight, flight, or actually freeze is the other mode, right? So if I have a parent, my kid's playing soccer, and he says something really rude and upsetting, I just stand there and I kind of freeze and I don't say anything. And then afterwards I go, oh, I should have said this or that or this, you know, but instead I just stood there looking like an idiot, you know. That's what happens in that mode, and you don't get to pick. Or one night an alarm went off in my house. I had just moved overseas, and I'm like running all over the house, and I ended up spraining my ankle. And people were like, why were you running around? Like, why didn't you just go get your kids and do this and that? And I'm like, because I was in fight or flight, right? I'm not thinking. And so really there's a lot we can do with, you know, with this technology, and how you wear it on your body is really varied. It's just the main principle is one is on one side and one is on the other. And they do make a vibration sound. So if you put them in your socks, unless it's like a very quiet environment, then usually people won't hear that you have anything on.
So that will work for, you know, if you have, if you're stressed out about school or you have a stressful job or anything like that?
Yeah, so some applications are, you know, kids today, I don't know about your system, I know you're in Florida, I'm in Arizona, and our school system is kind of like death by worksheet, right? And kids are having a really hard time. They have to, you know, sit down, and now they've got like 10 worksheets to do every night. So a lot of parents come to me and they're like, homework is such a struggle. My kid's procrastinating. He's upset about it. He doesn't want to do it. So it's like, well, just put the touch points on in their pockets and then have them do it. And it calms their stress switch down, and then they're less resistant. So when you're in stress switch mode, you're resistant. You procrastinate. You avoid. You're irritable. You're not empathic. You can't think clearly. You know, and this is why when we go into tests, we might forget a lot of the information. And as soon as we get out of the test, our stress switch starts to lower, and now our memory comes back online. And we're like, oh, I knew those answers, right? So a lot of people are wearing the touch points during tests. A lot of people are wearing them during presentations. A lot of people, you know, like my boyfriend and I, if we have something kind of hairy to talk about, I will put them on because I can feel my heart pounding. And then I will literally pass them back and forth while we talk. And we're able to maintain a level of calm to where we can be productive and problem solve instead of getting heightened and then, you know, saying something we don't mean, getting upset, being reactive. That's one of the number one rules in relationships is, you know, don't talk when one of you is in fight or flight. So when you're stressed, monitor your stress switches. And if one of you is above a 5 or a 6, don't talk. But where these people who are giving this advice leave off is they say, go calm down. But if you go calm down and then you come back and you have the same conversation, your stress switch is going to go right up to that same level again. So we didn't give people the pattern interrupt that they needed to stay calm when they reactivate the stress switch in the same situation. But the touch points will do that. So now if I'm reacting at a 7 or an 8 and I put them on, now I'm only a 3 or a 4. I can think when I'm a 3 or a 4. I can be rational when I'm in that state. but you have to get to that state. And thinking your thoughts cannot dim the stress switch back down when it's above a moderate level. So we got to stop trying to do that, everybody.
I think we all
know
want
it doesn't work. I'm talking. You're right. I mean, people are listening.
I think we all want
touch
points. We all want touch points. Where do
right,
we get them?
Right.
Where can we get them?
So you can get them on my website at amyserin.com. It's AmySerin.com. And if you're in Arizona, we also physically sell them at my clinics also.
Very cool. So do you just see people at your clinic, or do you see people, you know, from other places through video conferencing or anything like that? Is it mostly in your office that you see people?
We can do HIPAA-compliant teleconferencing. So there are rules in each state. I'm only licensed in Arizona, and so there are rules in how I can kind of practice when someone's in another state. But usually we can look at kind of the rules of the state and do a limited number of sessions. And some
mm-hmm.
states allow us, you know, more than that. But we do teleconferencing. And sometimes just an intake is helpful because a lot of people just don't even know what they need, you know. So a lot of people just need one session with me where I kind of say, look, let's go through what's going on, and then let me tell you what you need to resolve this, and let's find some people in your area and give you kind of a plan of action. You know, that's a possibility too. There's a lot of people, it's really confusing what's out there. I mean, when I get people in and they tell me what they've tried, it's like, you know, you got to hand it to people for really being diligent and persevering through a lot of treatments that don't work. You know, they'll try anything for relief, but weeding through the morass of kind of what works and what doesn't work can be really daunting. So if we can simplify that for people, sometimes that's what they need to get started.
Okay, that's good. So it's a jumping off point, and you'll give good advice. Can you do EMDR that way, or you have to do that in person?
I can do EMDR over teleconferencing. So what we do is we people get the touch points. So, you know, I extracted touch points from EMDR. It's kind of like, oh, we're taking vitamin C out of the orange, right? It's not the whole orange, but it's something that's beneficial from that. And so we can use touch points. People will get their own set, and then I teach them how to turn them on and use the eye movements while I'm on teleconferencing. And we can absolutely do it over teletherapy.
Oh, wow. So cool. That's great. That's good to know. So it's amyserin.com. Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's to just buy the touch points. If someone's interested in the clinics, then the website is serincenter.com. So Serin and then center spelled out .com.
Okay. So how long did it take you to invent these? I mean, it sounds like something that's quite detailed. How did you come up with this? And it's small, so that's a plus.
Yeah. Well, there are old wired devices that we used in EMDR that, you know, burn up 9-volt batteries in like 4 hours. And so I didn't invent the idea of bilateral stimulation. That's been actually used in therapy for about 30 years. But what I did was improved the waveform of how the stimulation is applied, and I put them in wireless form. So I use, in our clinics, we also do something called neurofeedback, and what that does is it uses EEGs. They're called electroencephalograms, and we just can put a cap on someone's head, and we can read about 80% of their brain's electrical activity now with our current science. And so they don't even have to go to the hospital for these anymore. We can do it outpatient. And we get a live EEG, and we look at where the brain is inefficient, and then we can train the brain to be more efficient with a process called neurofeedback. It's really exciting technology. In fact, a lot of people are curing PTSD with mostly neurofeedback, and then people have to do very few therapy sessions, actually. So for men especially, they love this because they don't have to talk so much. And EMDR is great because you don't have to talk as much as talk therapy.
Right.
And did you have a question?
So what you're doing is you're evaluating the part of the brain that's causing the problem and working with that physiology?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, we're neurofeedback, it's operant conditioning. And so if you've ever trained a dog, the dog has no clue what you're doing, everybody. I know you think they do, but they really don't. They don't know you really want it to shake its paw, but what you do is you train the dog to do this action based on giving it rewards. Whenever you give it a click or a treat or whatever the reward is, a little bit of dopamine gets released in the brain that kind of makes that behavior more likely to occur again. And so, and then you chain things together. So if it moves its paw a little way and then it has to move it, or if it's a complicated thing like asking the dog to turn around, that's a series of things and you have to kind of train it over time. Once you train the dog, it remembers it and then it can do it each time. We have to show the brain the way through operant conditioning. So when we measure the brainwave activity on an EEG and it's maladaptive, let's say someone has too much of a certain brain wave in a certain area, we wait for the brain to, and we're measuring it, to go into a more regulated state, because the brain's always fluctuating, okay? And once it goes into a better state, we give somebody an indication on a screen, like something on a screen will change. They'll get a point. They get a little reward. A point is rewarding, okay? It doesn't have to be like a piece of candy. So that actually solidifies the regulation in the brain. It's a very hard concept. I hope I'm being clear about it, because I'm trying to kind of whittle down this very complicated thing into, you know, an understandable form. But so if you don't get it, it's okay. But it's basically just, it's non-invasive, and we train the brain using computer system and electroencephalogram, and we get your brain to be more regulated. And once it's more regulated, it stays more regulated. So if I taught you, Randy, if you were coming to my office and I said, hey, I know the way you drove is inefficient. I can actually show you a way. I'm going to sit in a car with you and I'm going to show you how to get to my office and save 10 minutes off your drive. And then your hands on the wheel are fluctuating. They're going a little bit left, a little bit right. But let's say they go a little bit right just on their own. And I go, ding. Then you know to go more right. Ding, 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 ding. And you make a full right turn. Okay, that's kind of like how I teach you how to do it, and we do it a couple of times, and then what is your default? Your default is the shorter route, because it would be dumb to take the longer route. Your brain automatically functions with that kind of efficiency. So once we train the brain to be more efficient, it's like shaving that 10 minutes off. It's going to do that, and that's what we want. So stress, maintaining a high stress switch is inefficient for the brain. It got locked in as a pattern, either from abuse or a negative event or some genetics or whatever. And once we show it that better way, it keeps doing the better way. And that's sometimes how we can cure these things with just neurofeedback.
Oh, perfect.
I hope that
this
makes
is
sense.
So exciting.
Really,
yeah,
no,
I mean,
hard.
I'm so excited with this. I think this is amazing.
It's really
exciting.
All right, exciting.
We're almost out of time. So your book is The Stress Switch, The Truth About Stress and How to Short Circuit It. And you are Dr. Amy Sarin. So how do we get your book? This is a beautiful book, by the way.
So you can get my. Thank you so much. It's just, it's really was a labor of love, and I really appreciate it. You can get it on Amazon. It actually hit number one on Amazon for preventative medicine. So it's really excited about that. But Amazon or you can go to my website at amysarin.com. So that's AmySerin.com. And also you can check my Sarin Center website. I'm at a lot of conferences and doing book signings and things like that. So if you can ever catch me locally, I'd love to meet you and get you a signed copy.
Okay. You ever come to Florida?
I am not slated for Florida. I'm going to be in Denver, Idaho, California.
Okay, the other way.
But
okay.
I will let
All
you
right.
know. I know where
okay,
you are.
Okay, let
so
me know. Yeah, let me know. Okay, we're going to get cut off. So I want to be able to say goodbye to you and thank you. Really great show. Thanks so much. Great book, great show.
Thank you for having me. Thanks, Randy. Thank
okay.
you for all the work you do as well.
Oh, you're very welcome. I love it too. Mine's a labor of love as well. Okay, have a great day, Amy. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. So we are out
Bye.
Of time for today. If you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.